This week's episode is sponsored by Castos. Castos is a podcast hosting platform that helps you grow your audience through public podcasts and offer exclusive content through private ones. The WP Mirror podcast is actually hosted on Castos, and a whole process has been great from the very start. Check them out at castos.com. This week's episode is also sponsored by Translate Press. Translate Press lets you translate all your site content directly from the front end using a visual translation interface. You can translate everything you see, from standard text to more advanced elements like forms, sliders, images, WooCommerce products, and more. You can either translate everything manually or use the built-in automatic translation to have everything translated instantly. Try Translate Press, the easiest way to translate your WordPress site. Hi, this is Gabby Galea, and welcome to the WP Mirror podcast. In this episode, we'll be speaking to David Vogelpohl, VP of Growth at WP Engine. We'll be discussing how to optimize your WooCommerce store's performance for higher conversions, and we'll also touch upon WP Engine's WooCommerce hosting plans and full site editing. Okay, hi David. Welcome to the WP Mirror podcast.
Hi Gabby, thanks for having me.
How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm calling from Malta. It's pretty hot here. Too hot to go outside, actually. Are you in the US?
I am. I'm here in Austin, Texas. It's warm here as well, but we've actually had a fairly mild summer for Texas.
Well, at least you can enjoy it a bit more than we do.
I know.
Today we'll be discussing how we're going to optimize WooCommerce store's performance for increased conversions. David, you're from WP Engine, so just give us a bit of a background on who you are, what you do, and the company you're from.
Yeah, sure. Well, again, my name's David Vogelpohl. I've been in digital since 1996. I started at an internet service provider and server host in Houston, Texas. Throughout my career, I've worked on a lot of areas of digital. I also ran a WordPress agency for 5 years, focusing on all kinds of sites, including e-commerce. And then after an asset acquisition of my agency, joined WP Engine in 2015, where I now serve as VP of Growth within our SMB business unit.
So. Okay, so let's just jump right in. Talking about speed optimization, I think that's kind of a hot topic right now. You know, a lot of people are talking about it, especially with Google's changes that have been rolling out.
Core Web Vitals.
Everyone's heard of those. How would you say that speed directly influences sales?
Well, speed has kind of a dual pronged effect as we think about it from a growth perspective. I think the first thing I think about, I think is probably best, is the user's experience. And, you know, at the end of the day, a slow site, you know, gives a bad experience to the person, you know, shopping on the site. And so what we see is study after study, you know, kind of showing your conversion rates increasing as the speed of your site also increases. As your site gets faster, it gets better at converting. The other kind of hidden benefit there is that the things you do to make your site faster also make it more resilient to flash traffic events like a flash sale or, you know, getting mentioned in a popular publication. So the faster your site is, the better it also scales, which is kind of a double benefit there. And then the final piece is the point you made around Core Web Vitals, where Google is clearly using, you know, page performance as one of the signals of Core Web Vitals. And so the implication and what Google has basically said is that it is a ranking factor. Historically, Google had said, there's a video I used to always reference of Matt Cutts, and he said, think of speed like a tiebreaker. If all things are equal, then you know, we'll use speed as a tiebreaker. And the new quote Matt Cutts, a gentleman named John Mueller, and that's probably not a fair classification of John. He's a great gentleman in his own right. But he kind of indicated recently in some Twitter threads, which was covered on Search Engine Land, that Google would consider it more than a tiebreaker. So, you know, we see that signal's very strong there, tying performance and SEO.
Yeah, now that we're talking about Core Web Vitals, can we go a bit deeper into it and just I know there are various things that Google is looking at, so not just speed and user experience. There are specific things that Google is looking for. Can you talk us through that a bit more?
Sure. The first in Core Web Vitals is largest contentful pane. This is what we think of as a performance metric. So Google and Core Web Vitals, really what it boils down to is that there are three components, and Google considers all three relevant to your Core Web Vitals score. The first is LCP, which is focused again on that kind of page performance, page load time type KPI. The second is cumulative layout shift. And the best way to understand cumulative layout shift is, like, if you ever go to a site and you know how, like, the content bounces around as the ad is loading, that has bad CLS. And then finally, first input delay, which again is kind of a more UX focused thing. And so typically, if you're messing with FID and cumulative layout shift, you're kind of messing with your theme and how your page is rendered in that way. And then largest contentful pane could be that, but it could also be things like your CDN and your servers and other aspects of your site that make it fast.
Right. So, okay, let's say I've got a WooCommerce store and I want to get my site optimized. How do I get an idea of where my site falls in this whole
thing? Yeah, and how do you know? Like, what do you use to measure? So if you're optimizing for Core Web Vitals, which there's a lot of compelling reasons to do that, there's also compelling reasons to use other tools. But if you're doing it for that and you're unfamiliar with, I think, like, the best place to start is Page Speed Insights by Google. Mm-hmm. What it does is it allows you to enter the URL of a specific web page. And in addition to the KPI associated with Core Web Vitals, it gives you a lot of other information on the load of your site. But you can test an individual page there and see your scores. And it gives you nice, like, green, orange, and red as indicators to know if you're kind of within the bounds of Core Web Vitals or not. I think it's also important to use the mobile view when you run those Page Speed Insights tests.
Okay.
Because, you know, again, Google's kind of given some indications they favor the mobile scores, and maybe indications is even too weak a word there. They literally, you know, said that that's how they, you know, kind of think of their index and how they think of rankings. So I do recommend folks, you know, use the mobile scores as their baseline.
And I guess it's useful to keep track of this as you're making changes on your site to see if things are actually improving or not.
Yeah, and I think that's the trick, right? Is, like, this is something you should be checking every time you make a major page change to your site. So in the e-commerce sense, like, every time you add a product, no, probably not, especially if you're using, like, the same size images and stuff like that. But you're going to add a plugin that adds functionality or some other, like, large element to the page or page or post types, then yeah, go ahead and run it through PageSpeed. insights and see how your scores are doing. But yeah, I like to do it every time making a material change to a site. Mm-hmm. It has to be an ongoing thing, not just like a project.
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned plugins. We're actually going through an optimization process for WP Mirror itself. We were affected by the Core Web Vitals as well. So the first thing we had to do was go through our plugins and see. I mean, you'd be surprised how many plugins there are that you don't actually use, or they've been left there from past projects. So how important do you think going through your plugins and cleaning them out, maybe, I don't know, yearly, how does that impact?
Yeah, as a general practice, I think that's fantastic. I know that as we think of WP Engine's, like, agency partners and how they work with clients when they do a redesign or certainly a performance optimization project, the first thing they do, and you know, I think is also good practice and how I think about managing sites, is to audit those plugins and think about the jobs that they're doing. Now, there's a lot of folks who like to, you know, oh, don't use plugins and you know, maybe make a custom plugin for everything. And I know very few people that actually practice that in full. But the reason people add a plugin to a site is to do a job. And usually the job they're imagining doing is to generate some kind of value, right? And that's why I think we see e-com sites, WooCom sites, tend to have more plugins on average, at least on the WP Engine platform, than other forms of sites. And again, it gets down to the fact that they're doing some kind of job, and presumably some kind of job that makes money. Now, not every job that you added to your site works out in terms of making money. And so I feel like a lot of people feel kind of bound to keeping something on their site because, you know, it was an idea at some point in time. They're not really wanting to spend the time to unwind it, but could be having performance implications. And so, you know, I think if you're not very technical, I think just playing plug-in whack-a-mole, turning a plug-in off and seeing if your site gets faster, and then deciding if you really need that plug-in, if for some reason it did, I think that's a great way to start. And then I think as you get more sophisticated, like, again, the plugins are there to do a job, to try to make some money in some way. So, like, I think being very purposeful about taking content away, but measuring the effect, or, you know, features away by disabling plugins and then measuring the effect on revenue, that's really the move, right? So that's how I think about it, I guess, just in general. But yeah, I mean, you can have one plugin that can crash your site because it's built poorly, and you can have, you know, 100 plugins that work just fine together. So I'm a big fan of getting the job done, but, you know, effectively and not in a way that crashes your site or makes it unusually slow.
I think there's a bit of you have to strike a bit of a balance because you want to give your users all the things they expect from a WooCommerce store. And then at the same time, if it's going to slow down your website, it's giving them an even worse user experience. So yeah, you have to kind of find the balance somehow.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. I call this exercise of performance optimization the balance of suffering and joy. And what I mean by that is I can make the world's fastest website. It will have one period on it, and it will be, you know, in a CDN, and it will be the world's fastest website. But that won't sell very well. And this is where you kind of mentioned that balance. But the what I mean by the balance of suffering and joy is, you know, the joy of adding an experience like a 360-degree image tour to your e-com product page. But the suffering that you're going to get with that balance is, you know, a slower load time on that page. And so, like, I think, like, getting myopically focused on speed is kind of missing the point. Like, your job is to get a sale, and speed is an element in that. But there's other elements where you may need to yield some of that speed to deliver value to the user.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally agree. And how are there any tools out there where, like, let's say Google Analytics, for example? I know it gives you the basic, like, page views and all this, but how can it help you track how people are interacting with your site at all?
Well, from a page speed perspective, you know, I think Google Analytics, there's certainly all kinds of ways to use it from an interacting perspective. I mean, certainly using the e-com tracking within Google Analytics, so you can get, like, full views of your transactions and then cut that by source and medium and ad campaign and every other thing. I mean, I think that's, like, for me, a baseline. You can further utilize it certainly for things like funnel analysis, which I think is helpful in a lot of clear ways. Mm-hmm. One of the other areas, I think, though, around performance that I really like is they do have a page speed metric in Google Analytics that you can basically cut by various dimensions. So one of the ways I like to cut up the page speed metric is you start to think, like, well, if I know, like, an average user's page speed in Google Analytics, like, how would I want to see that? Like, what would be important to me? Well, you might say, like, well, what's my average page speed from visitors coming from pay-per-click? Like, maybe that's helpful, maybe not. Certainly mobile versus non-mobile. But really, I think for a global company, where it gets really interesting is in geography. So, yeah. Like, how is my site loading in the United States? If I'm a regional business, how is my site loading in my region? If you get really nerdy, and you can actually do this with Google Analytics, you can even dial it down to the ISP level. And so this can influence, like, how you configure your CDN, maybe even where you host your website. Certainly for global companies, that can have a huge influence. And I love it. I have a short URL I can, like, read out. I know this is audio.
Sure, yeah. No, we'll put it in our show notes.
Yeah, cool. But litturl.co. /GA-PageSpeed will give you a custom Google Analytics report that cuts it up all the ways I just described.
Wow. Nice. Yeah. Yeah, we're talking about global stores. I imagine, yeah, it's going to be super hard to get great page speeds around the world. And what can hosting do to help this?
Well, I think hosting plays a couple of roles. And, you know, I know we're talking kind of in the Woo universe for a minute. So I think, like, as I think of Woo stores, by their very nature, they are dynamic. And generally, all e-commerce sites are, right? And so what do we mean by, like, dynamic, and why does that matter? But, like, fundamentally, what we mean is that a lot of the experiences in Woo are not super cacheable. So when you load a category page, you need to know what products are in it. You need to know if things are on sale, what their prices are, if things have, like, come out of the inventory. On a lot of WooCommerce experiences, you have, like, the dynamic cart element. And these things make it difficult to cache that kind of experience. Again, not picking on Woo, but, like, just the nature of the site. So when you host and you think about hosting, like, there's two parts of it, which I think are important. One is, like, the caching and CDN, so kind of distributing your site out to the web. And then there's, like, the core server part that, you know, is essentially you have caching within it, but then you also have all the other resources of essentially your server. Now, in a Woo case, it's very important to have a lot of horsepower on that back end. Now, for simple brochure sites, you can kind of get away with less horsepower on the back end because you can leverage your CDN level caching to a much greater degree. So I think with dynamic sites or sites that require a lot of kind of root core processing power, your hosting becomes really important, especially if you're going to kind of scale up in terms of visitors. And then, you know, I mean, you have hosts like us that specialize in WordPress, and then hosts that are kind of generic and host, like, any kind of site. I'm a shill for a host that does that. But I think the advantage from the way we do things, of course, is that we only focus on WordPress, and we have a specific WooCommerce offering. You know, a lot of hosts like us do that. And so, you know, as our CEO says, where there's focus, there's progress. And so, you know, again, that's our value play and the benefit we think we have there, but certainly recognize the value of, you know, kind of managing on a generic host and doing it yourself. But I think the key thing there is that with Woo, you're going to need a little more processing power on the back end. There's ways to accommodate that. So, like, by sake of example, with ours, and we're not the only place that does this, you can get this in other places, but we leverage something called compute optimized infrastructure. And what that does is it routes those dynamic requests generally 40% faster than other types of infrastructure. And we have competitors that use similar types. And then the other piece I think that you can do that's really interesting with these dynamic requests is you can offload them. So these queries that are often used to build out things like shopping and category views are running through WordPress itself and WooCommerce, and that's taxing your WordPress server. Well, if you leverage something like an ElasticPress cluster or even things like Algolia, you can offload some of those requests, which will lessen the load on kind of the root infrastructure you're using for your site. And that's kind of a neat way to both improve your search experience and actually make your website faster. So, like, if you really want to get into the details of optimizing it, there's a lot you can do to help it, you know, become faster and, you know, more manageable over time. But I think, like, there's a lot of basics you can do too that'll gain you a lot of ground. Running plugins like, oh my goodness, I'm drawing a blank here, WP Rocket and Nitro Pack, I think are great ways to get kind of an incremental lift without, you know, getting super nerdy on all the tech stuff.
Mm-hmm. I'm quite new actually to hosting, so I'm going to speak to you as someone like a regular user would.
Yeah, please do.
So I'm just going to track back and sort of dig into a few points that you've mentioned. So it's sort of with CDN. What exactly is CDN and how does it help a global website, so WooCommerce website in particular?
Sure. CDN is a content distribution network. And basically the way it works is you're storing bits and pieces of your site, and in some cases, your whole web page, on servers all around the internet and world, but internet actually is kind of maybe a more accurate way to say that, because where these servers are located, and in WP Engine's case, we use a company called Cloudflare. There's other types of CDNs you can use with your site, but what it does is it pushes a piece of your website to all of these servers all around the world, and strategically located at basically what are called interconnection points with the internet, where all these networks kind of tie in all of their fiber and their other types of networks into one location to exchange traffic. And because your server is located both geographically close to the end user with a piece of the website on it, and also from the internet perspective, the least number of hops, the closest to those interconnection points, when users are downloading your website, they're often downloading most of, if not all of, the page from a server that's both geographically and from a network perspective, very close to them. And so the more cacheable your website is, the more you can take advantage of that. And so that kind of gets back to the dynamic nature of WooSites I was talking about. It's like you can't always fully take advantage of that. And so that's why it's important to have a strong core on your web host. But that's what a CDN is. Bits and pieces of your website spread all over the world, like right there close to those visitors.
So let's say I've got a WooCommerce store which sells clothing, and I'm targeting the summer in the US and winter in Australia. Does this have any correlation to CDN? Can I do this?
Not particularly. Where it would have a correlation is, so you have Australia and what was the other geo you mentioned?
US, for example.
US. Okay, gotcha. So other sides of the world. So basically, imagine for a minute that your company was based in Australia. And for whatever reason, you wanted to host with a company that was based in Australia. A lot of hosts actually will, you know, kind of create entities in different countries like that in order to facilitate that. We actually do that. We have an entity in Australia for WP Engine. And so, but, you know, you have a customer that kind of wants to host there, and it might also be for data reasons. You know, sometimes people want the data for their customers, like located in a specific geography for all kinds of reasons. But, you know, they want people to access their web page in the USA or just maybe globally. Well, your host and where your site is hosted might be in Australia, but it's helpful for you to have a bit, you know, pieces or again, entire web pages available for instant download from the USA. So that would be the correlation there. It wouldn't be necessarily directly tied to like the way you might seasonally market it, It basically, think of it like extending your hosting to like every corner of the internet. That's what a CDN does.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you also mentioned ElasticPress, I believe. Is that
separate?
Is that a separate?
So this one's a really fun one. So this one I think is both a non-technical and also a technical tip. So ElasticPress is a solution that makes WordPress search better. There's other things that do that. There's plugins. There's another company called Algolia that does this really well. But fundamentally, what these solutions are doing is making WordPress search better. Now, what I mean by that is if you go into a standard WordPress search bar and you misspell a word, you'll often get no results. You can't really customize the results very easily. There's no type ahead. In other words, if you start typing, it like auto suggests, like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. There's other kind of key usage features. Now, 43% of shoppers use that search bar on an e-commerce site. And those that do are twice as likely to buy. So you have this kind of less than optimal, less than expected experience when a shopper's on a Woo store, when they go to use the search bar. Like, oh my goodness, I barely misspelled that and it has no results. I got to type out the whole name of this product to like find this thing. I don't see any auto suggesting. I just have to kind of type it and wait for results to like load on a web page. Like these are all like counterintuitive things, I think, for what people expect these days. So what these plugins and what ElasticPress and Algolia and things like that do is they basically add all the features I just said were missing, which is fantastic. Now, the cheapest way to do that is with like plugins on WordPress.org. And I think there's like some premium ones that don't cost very much, and that will add that experience to your store. The cool thing about ElasticPress, and this is maybe for more advanced organizations and some hosts will bundle it with their solutions like we do, but they have a ElasticPress cluster. And basically, it's a whole other series of servers that handle these queries. And that's where you're able to offload some of your Woo queries, basically, and WordPress mm-hmm. queries to that other batch of servers. And in doing that, that actually makes your store faster. And so that was the advantage of ElasticPress I was talking about earlier. But like mm-hmm. the core functional difference that it does for your site is it makes your search better and it helps you convert more. Our customers that run a solution like that or our solution with that get up to an 18% increase in sales just by enabling that one wow. little piece. So,
yeah, it's yeah. something you might miss, but it's a great way of getting in those extra sales. The other thing I wanted to speak to you about is you mentioned Nitro Pack. Is this bundled as well in the WP Engine hosting, or is it something separate?
No, Nitro Pack and WP Rocket are kind of in the same class of solutions. And fundamentally, what they do is they add aspects to performance optimization that really kind of augment cheap hosting first. So if you were on something like a GoDaddy or a Bluehost, mm-hmm. I'm not picking on anybody, but I'm just saying like generally these fundamentally, they don't, at least in some of their core offerings, don't offer like a managed type solution. And that means some things. And part of what it means is caching. And like WP Rocket and Nitro Pack kind of add this caching layer is one of the key things they'll do for people on hosts that don't support that. On a WP Engine or other types of managed WordPress hosts, usually we'll have our own kind of proprietary, you know, highly optimized caching layer. And so it's just different than what they have. And I'm not like picking on one or the other, but it's just different. And so you can't run them both at the same time. However, WP Rocket and Nitro Pack kind of yield to the host's caching layer. And so those parts kind of take a back seat when you run them on a platform like ours. But there's some other critical parts and customers running those solutions on our platform have faster sites on average than those that don't at large scales, right? Not individual sites or anything, but like, because, you know, people go to crazy links to make their site faster. Maybe crazy is the wrong term, but just like extreme links because they want to get every second out of it. But they do some other helpful things like minifying your JavaScript and your CSS. They often will come with kind of image compression services kind of integrated within it and other aspects to making your site faster. They kind of go above and beyond what most managed hosts would provide. Now, some like provide little bits here and there, and there's kind of reasons that line is where it is, but they kind of take it one step further than in a lot of key ways than what you get or what you kind of use a managed host for.
Okay. Yeah. So my next question was, okay, so I've got the WooCommerce store. I've tracked how people use it. I'm trying to optimize for Core Web Vitals, gone through my plugins, cleaned that out. And now I'm going to start looking at hosting. And there are so many options out there. And we know, like, I'm sure I would go for a managed hosting platform, but then how should I pick the right one for my store? It's a bit confusing, I guess, when it comes to choosing the right one.
Yeah. Okay. So all of this, of course, through the lens of I work at WP Engine, but I'll put on my hat for my agency days and think about this, you know, from a broader perspective and answer it like that. I think first and foremost, you know, at least in my agency days, we chose the right tool for the job. And I feel like our agency partners at WP Engine, for the most part, you know, operate in that way. And I think that's a very reasonable way to operate. I do think cheaper hosting is just fine for a lot of folks. But what does that mean, this notion of cheaper hosting? And like, what is the difference between that and something more expensive or managed? I think like some of the key differences is going to be first and foremost, hosting that's, you know, $3 or $5 a month or something akin to that. The way that they achieve that typically is what's called oversubscription, or maybe over is a strong word because I guess it still works and over is a relative term. But what that means is we're going to put a lot of websites on one server so we maximize our margins and can reduce our prices as much as possible. And typically, one of the ways you go about making sure your prices are as low as possible is you don't add a bunch of what we call managed services on top of that. So for us, this means things like making sure all of our customers' WordPress versions are up to date and patched for security vulnerabilities, and that all of the WordPresses are patched for security vulnerabilities. That all of our customers have patched versions of PHP. There's a shocking percentage of WordPress sites that are on unpatched versions of PHP. And what that means is if a vulnerability is discovered, no one is going to fix it in that version of PHP, and a host kind of let these sites kind of linger out there and be in that way. So like, this is a key part, but typically where folks will start to be attracted to managed WordPress hosting is typically we'll have advanced or easier build tools. So things like one-click staging, automatic backups, one-click rollback from backups. In the case of WP Engine and similar types of companies that specialize in e-commerce, they might have specific tools for building or managing your store, integrated things like ElasticPress. And so, you know, you kind of, the way I think of like the cheaper hosting is it's a great place to start, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to start a store from scratch. I don't know what's going to happen. I just want to try it out. It's a great place for that. And then as you graduate and as you need more performance or more scale, or, you know, there's more on the line, you know, there's a lot of value in those managed hosting, in that managed hosting tier. And it does seem like a big jump up. Like, the cheaper hosting is advertised at like $3 a month. And then a company like WP Engine's shared hosting will start at like $30 a month. That's 10 times the cost. You're like, what is going on? Why? How are you 10 times better? And really what the answer is, well, that's a $27 price difference. So if having the faster site, if having the better build tools, if having the more assurance and security, and having that growth lever in your business helps you grow by more than $27 a month, then we're worth it. If that's not your growth trajectory, well, then it's not worth it. And so like, it's just an interesting way to think about like the price difference, because I get like it's a big jump, but the difference is it's like, you know, with that performance comes the higher conversion rates and the better SEO, and with the build tools means you can get your ideas out faster and so on and so forth. Like it's just an investment in infrastructure. And so each person has to decide like, well, where am I at and what's best for me? But I'm 100% a big proponent of using the right tool for the right job.
Yeah, definitely. And when it comes to WooCommerce hosting in particular, do you have different plans and at WP Engine?
Yeah. So at WP Engine, we launched our e-commerce specific plans this year. Now, a very large percentage of our customers were already running WooCommerce. WP Engine was founded back in 2010. And so we've had a long history of servicing Woo stores. Woo was founded in 2011, if I'm not mistaken. So very shortly thereafter. You know, Woo's a partner of ours, and we're very big proponents, certainly, of WordPress and WooCommerce. But what we have basically are offerings within our shared plans and for our dedicated hosting customers. This is specific to both the ElasticPress feature I explained earlier. So that's included in those plans. We also have on the dedicated side, the compute optimized infrastructure. And then both our shared and dedicated plans have the offloading effect. So it's not just making search better, it's also offloading a lot of those queries and making your store faster. But for us, basically what we deliver through those e-com plans, at least what we've measured so far, is up to a 40% speed improvement and stores that convert up to 18% more sales.
Yeah, those are some great numbers.
We're trying to push them up. So we have a lot of engineers working to help folks. But that's really, you know, the fundamental mission there is, you know, delivering that performance, delivering that ease to go to market. And all of that, of course, for an e-com store means driving more sales.
Mm-hmm. And does the price vary according to specific thing based on the WooCommerce website, let's say page views? Or
the pricing is kind of tiered into, we'll call it kind of two classes. So the first would be in our shared plans. So we have named these plans Startup, which is basically designed around kind of a single low traffic site that starts at $30 a month. from there, we go up basically in terms of like the number of sites and the amount of traffic. But the key e-commerce related features. So I think like, first of all, there's like the body of WP Engine platform features. So all the stuff I talked around, keeping WordPress up to date and PHP up to date, optimizing security, performance, all of that from the WordPress platform perspective, of course, that's all included. But the e-com specific features include what we call instant store search, which is powered by ElasticPress, which I've already talked about. We also have the ability to create a kind of a one-click store creator. So if you are DIY, that's actually super helpful, but it's also helpful if you're an agency building lots of stores. And included with that are basically e-commerce blocks that work with WooCommerce. So as you're building out new content or new experiences, we've provided a library of those, as well as if you're a developer, the ability to create your own custom versions of those without using React. So PHP, HTML, and CSS only. And so that's a benefit for the developer. And then the final piece, which I think is very helpful for e-commerce stores, is basically an automated plugin update service. So we monitor for updates. We can run it in production or staging. So I run it in staging on my sites, but you can run it in prod if you wanted. But not only does it detect the updates and applies them after performing an initial backup, but it also does what's called automatic visual regression testing. So it's looking to see if the update breaks your store. And so you can leverage this service as part of these e-com plans. So you have like our shared hosting, and then you have also like dedicated and clusters for like, you know, big stores or stores with a lot on the line. Like there's a lot of value in kind of having your own environment. So even if you don't have a lot of traffic, sometimes people will want that, you know, because you get a performance boost from getting your own server. So a lot of people will, you know, like I said, the price jump might be high, but the value you get from that, those benefits is might be more than what the price jump is. I mean, that's the whole point of all those.
Yeah, exactly. I think one thing we didn't really touch upon is the visual aspect of WooCommerce stores. So you've got tons of images most of the time, and also the theme. How do you think this impacts speed optimization, and how can you tackle it?
You know, a CDN is a big part of this because there are specifically even like image CDNs that will specifically distribute your images. So I think that's a really big part of making sure, you know, that your Woo store is optimized. If you're not using a CDN for your images, is definitely something to tackle. Things like WP Rocket and Nitro Pack can help with this. I think the other side, like this is definitely one of those balance of suffering and joy items, right? Like if you think about it for a minute, like if we said, okay, how do I optimize my images to be faster? You would say, well, compress them and don't use as big of them and don't use as many of them. And then if you were to go to someone and say, well, how do I sell my product better? You would say, we need really clear images and we need a lot of them. And like, it's the opposite of everything you just said. And so like, I think like, at the end of the day, it's, you know, you need to find that balance between like, you know, if, and I think performance is always your goal, but like, how do you find that balance for, you know, delivering a good experience, delivering enough information, you know, to effectively make the sale, you know, without burdening your site with, you know, excessive amounts of content. I think pagination is another neat way to do this. So like, let's say by sake of example that you wanted to do that 360 degree tour. Okay, no big deal, but do you really need to load it for every visitor? Like maybe it's only the visitors that need the 360 degree product tour, and you can embed elements within your product pages that allow you to, you know, either one, click off to a different page to see that, or, you know, load that page in a way that doesn't, you know, burden every user loading the page.
Yeah, that's interesting. And you do that in what way? How would you do that?
There's a variety of ways you could approach it. I don't know of like a plugin solution off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. Pop-up window would certainly do it. Potentially okay. Things like an iframe. It's been so long since I've architected anything like that. I'm gonna stop myself before I architect something dangerous and somebody goes out and does it. But my point is, I mean, there are ways to go about it where you don't actually push the user off to another page. you know, a pop-up would be one example. I don't know if it's the best example. There's other ways to delay the loading. NitroPack actually is kind of interesting in this way. And this is getting a little nerdy here, but from the high level, they delay loading of some JavaScripts. So you can kind of selectively decide when you load certain things. Mm-hmm. Lazy loading images is another good example of this. And this is supported in WordPress core now. But basically you're kind of waiting to load some parts as the user kind of experiences the page. And so there's multiple paths you could take there, but it would be kind of specific to the situation and how you might architect around it.
Right. I'm not sure if this falls under your area of expertise, but I had one question about page builders and what do you think about how they affect the website?
You know, page builder plugins, I think there's a lot, of course, that have happened since 2018 when, you know, Gutenberg was rolled into WordPress core as the block editor. I think page builder plugins have filled a very critical hole in the WordPress experience for a very long time, and I think deliver an incredible amount of value. I'm a big fan of Elementor and what they do. I'm a big fan of Beaver Builder and what they do, and others, and still do today. And I think, like, I think the first thing to recognize is they've been at this a lot longer than you know, the Gutenberg builder. I think they also fulfill different kinds of roles in the site creation experience. And I think that there's a lot of jobs where they're the, you know, a very excellent choice. Where people tend to, you know, start to kind of talk down on page builders is things like performance. But even there, with things like full page caching, even page builders that might have, you know, an effect on performance that people might not like, it can sometimes be overcome with things like full page caching. And so I don't like have a blanket statement on page builders. I think there's some amazing ones. I think there's some incredible ways of implementing them. I know very sophisticated agencies that use them in a lot of contexts. Landing page builders for clients is a big one. And so I think they're very functional tools. Now, I think as we think about Gutenberg, though, the block editor, as we think about full site editing and how that's mm-hmm. evolving and themes and in this kind of very kind of builder first way of WordPress evolving, you know, I think the role of page builders will continue to evolve. But like mm-hmm. I said, I think they're driving an incredible amount of value there. But I'm also very excited at, you know, the role of the block editor in core. And I think the capabilities it both unlocks for DIY users, but also developers, right? If you think about like what makes WordPress popular is that developers can basically make it into a custom CMS that delivers a certain kind of experience. And that's what the page builders fundamentally did, but all of that value is locked up in their solution. So now that that kind of experience is in WordPress core, plugins and other theme providers and all kinds of folks can leverage those types of experiences. And I think that's adding to WordPress's strength. But I think the page builders have fundamentally in the past and continue and will continue to add a tremendous amount of value to WordPress.
Mm-hmm. We're actually using Elementor on our own website, and it's enabled us to actually have the redesign, which was, I mean, it was 10 years in the making and we just couldn't find the time. It made it really easy to do it. But with full site editing, yeah, it's super interesting what's happening there. And I know StudioPress is also part of WP Engine now, and they've also shifted their way of creating themes to more of a block editor type of solution.
Yes, I actually have a lot of history with that within the company and actually led the acquisition of WP Engine and StudioPress. At that time, I'm trying to remember, this would have been 2018. So it would have been before the big announcement or, you know, launch of WordPress 5.0 in December. And the block editor is coming. It's very clear that it's coming. And in the StudioPress world, and for those unfamiliar, the root technology historically of StudioPress has been the Genesis theme framework. Now, the theme framework, of course, had no concept of blocks because blocks didn't exist. And right around the time of the acquisition, the block editor is like coming fast and furious. So all theme companies, and not just you know, Studio Press and now via WP Engine had to like decide like, well, what are we going to do? Right. I don't know if you remember, but there was that whole classic press push and I don't know where that ever went, but I haven't heard about it much since. But we, as many did, focused on the block editor, and that's what we've been investing in the Genesis universe. And, you know, I don't think that's any different than what Genesis ever did before. Genesis always worked with WordPress core. And, you know, I think a lot of frameworks kind of do it in that way where it's like meant to augment and enhance the kind of core value of WordPress itself. And so that's been our strategy with our products like Genesis Blocks, kind of working with the block editor. And so that's the path that we chose for Genesis. But again, it wasn't like a surprise that like Genesis kind of always worked like that. And so that's what we kept doing.
Right. Okay, so we veered off a bit, but it's still a very interesting topic.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've got anything else you want to add to our main topic, which is WooCommerce.
No, I think, you know, the only other thing in my world is GrowSuite from Flywheel, which is another company we had acquired. And so that's another thing, I guess, been on my mind in the agency MRR journey, but maybe that's a conversation for another day.
If you want to just, I mean, we've got another 15 minutes. So if you want to go into that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing on my plate these days, you know, if we have, I'm trying to get all my years straight here. It's been a little over 2 years since the Flywheel acquisition, since Flywheel kind of joined the WP Engine family. For those unfamiliar, you know, Flywheel has a rich history as a managed host. They're also the makers of the free local WordPress tool, Local, at localwp.com. And there's a tremendous amount of, I mean, the whole thing is free, frankly, but it allows you to run a WordPress instance on your computer and, you know, kind of push it back and forth between your hosts and work on it in various ways. And that's pretty cool. But what basically within the Flywheel universe was launched effectively this year in GA is a product offering called GrowSuite. It's fundamentally a platform for allowing freelancers and agencies to manage clients. So things like client billing, automated monthly recurring charges for things like maintenance plans, but also one-time project-based billing, as well as the ability to kind of integrate in site management, particularly for those who are, you know, offering hosting to their clients, like in a quote reseller type model. But it's been very cool. So we went to GA, and I think the part that's most interesting about the GrowSuite story is the revenue story there, because it's really designed to generate MRR with maintenance and care packages. There's like there's the automated plugin update stuff I talked about earlier, but also like human verification. So it's really set up for like this maintenance package, care package type model for freelancers and agencies.
It's very interesting. So yeah, thank you, David. It's been a pleasure having you. We've learned a lot about how to optimize your sites, specifically WooCommerce. Where can our listeners reach you?
Yeah, check me out on Twitter at WP David V.
Great. We'll put that in the show notes too. David, what can I say? Thank you for your time and thank you for explaining everything in a very easy to understand way. It was great to have you on.
Thank you so much, Gabby.